So originally I was going to make a video talking about Boy Scouts because I was a Boy Scout, but then as I was writing the script I thought about all the fun things I did as a Cub Scout. So here we are. Cub Scouts is something you can do before you're old enough to be a Boy Scout. It's not required to do Cub Scouts to be a Boy Scout. It's just if you're up to it or if your parents signed you up, you can do it. Now you're already pretty young when you can start doing Boy Scouts. It's why it's called Boy Scouts, not Man Scouts. You can start doing Cub Scouts when you're 7. At what point does it just become babysitting in uniform? So all you people watching over the age of 7, let me tell you what you missed out on. Unlike Boy Scouts that wear a tan uniform, Cub Scouts wear a dark blue uniform. Now there are 4 ranks to the Cub Scouts. There were some requirements you had to do to go up the ranks, but if you went to the meetings every week, you'd be fine. You didn't have to do anything on your own time. And even if you did all the requirements in the rank, you still had to be in the rank for at least a year. So basically the ranks were based on your age. When you were 7 years old in first grade, you were a Tiger Scout. The second graders were the Wolf Scouts, the third graders were the Bear Scouts, and the fourth graders, aka the really cool ones because you're the oldest. Actually, before I tell you, just guess what the mascot for the fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts is. Leave your guesses in the comment box below. Just kidding, don't do that. I don't care. We have a tiger, a wolf, and a bear. That rhymed. What animal is cooler than all 3 of those? I'll tell you. Nothing. And that was the mascot.
There was no mascot.
Welcome to the real world, fourth graders! There's no such thing as cartoon anthropomorphic animals. So if you did guess anything in the comments, you were wrong. I told you not to guess. The fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts was called Weebelos. Weeb-a-los. Very fitting name. It goes, Tiger, Wolf, Bear, Weebelos? What kind of animal is that? Apparently it's supposed to stand for, We Be Loyal Scouts, cause we talk like pirates. Don't worry, Cub Scouts, I'll make you a mascot for the Weebelos. Here, it's a made-up animal for a made-up word. Use it however you like. The Wikipedia page also talked about a bobcat badge, but I don't remember doing that, so that's whatever, it's not important. I can't even remember what we did as Cub Scouts. We would just meet at some person's house, I think it was one of the kids' moms, and she just had some activity for us to do outside, and we would just play. My mom told me that she was my scout leader for a year, but I don't remember that. I do remember we talked about bike safety, and I remember I fell off my bike a lot. I still got the award, though. Each rank had a handbook that said what activities you would do, and I looked on Google for pictures of the handbook, and I found these books with gritty, serious, tough covers. And I was shocked because the handbooks I grew up with had the mascots on them, and I liked it! The old books were cute and had pictures! You're not trying to get rid of the mascots, are you, Cub Scouts? I think it's funny that each mascot gets progressively unhealthier, which is why my Weebelo mascot looks the way it does. And I think I might be suppressing this memory, but every time we went up a rank, there would be this award ceremony thrown by the leaders, and I think we metaphorically drank the blood of the mascot. I mean, it was really just fruit juice, but...
Hello?
Hey, TJ.
Hey, James.
Do you remember Cub Scouts?
Yeah.
Did we, whenever we went up the ranks, did we metaphorically drink the blood of the mascot?
I think that's just something our leaders did. Like, some leaders chose to do it and ours did, but I don't think everyone did it.
Oh, we had weird leaders.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Okay, bye, TJ. So another thing we did as Cub Scouts was go to this thing called Cub Scout Day Camp. I don't know if it was just an Arizona thing, but I hated it. Cub Scout Day Camp took camping and made it unfun. And surprisingly, even as a 7 and 8 year old, I loved camping. Really, James? Someone who sits in front of the computer all day drawing Pokemon? You like toughing it out and sleeping in the woods? Yes! Oh, yes! If you've never been camping, get on that! I'm talking about real camping, though, not this day camp. Cub Scout Day Camp was during the summer, an Arizona summer. And we would get up super early, like 8 o'clock, eat breakfast at home, and then you and your whole troop carpooled for about 2 hours to camp. There were a bunch of other Cub Scout troops that met there, too. It was a pretty big thing. You were supposed to pack your own lunch, and all the other boys had really cool lunches, like Lunchables and Go-Gurts and, ironically, Subway. I was jealous of kids with Subway sandwiches, and all my mom packed me was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat bread. So before the day even starts, I'm already in a bad mood. You start the day sitting in this big auditorium, but it's outside. The leaders would tell you to drink lots of water, and they actually gave all the troops a bag of water balloons, and they wanted us to throw them at each other because that would keep us moist and not die of heat stroke. But water balloons are stupid because 90% of the time they don't even break on impact. You're just beating some poor kid to death with a bag of water. Then you would separate into your troop, and there was a rotation of activities for you to do all day. We ate dinner, and then we went back to the auditorium, and some of the leaders put on a play. I mean, it was a pretty dumb play, but I was invested in the story. But then at 10 p.m., you went home. You didn't even get to sleep in a tent. Sleeping in a tent is one of the most fun things about camping. And also, the whole time, we didn't get a campfire, because it's dangerous to have fire around 7 to 10-year-olds or something. But they did let us do archery, because that's safe. Then the next day, you went back and you did it all over again. And then you would do it for a third day, too. So 3 days of this. 3 days of people throwing water balloons at you, and you can't get them back because you have a weak throwing arm. And you're probably wondering, James, what's with all the complaining? This sounds like fun. I mean, sure, other kids probably had fun. I might have been a little dramatic as an 8-year-old. One time on the second day of camping, I was clumsy and I kept falling off the rocks that I was climbing on, and I kept getting all these scrapes and bruises, and they really hurt. And then we went swimming. That was one of the activities. There was a swimming pool. But just being the little punk kid that I was like, no, I don't want to go swimming. So they made me sit off to the side, and they said I couldn't swim. But then later I was like, I want to go swimming now. After you swam, the leaders told you to check your shoes for scorpions, and I remember I didn't check because I hated everyone. And you know the play the leaders put on at the end of the day? It was split up into 3 parts, 1 part for each day. So it was left on a cliffhanger. I wanted to go see it, but everyone else in the troop wanted to play with water balloons. And I never found out how the play ended. The next morning, when I was supposed to leave for the third day, I told my mom that I didn't want to go, and she had to tell the carpool that her son didn't want to go because he's a huge puss. And then afterwards, when they were handing out the awards, I didn't get a single award because I didn't go the third day, so I didn't finish any of the activities. And then I never went back to Cub Scout Day Camp since, and that's why I hated it. Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things, you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What? I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take 2 already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippocampus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt, and no one in his field is hiring! Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it.
You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse?
Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone?
No. But the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans.
Probably should have started with that one.
That's... okay, I guess. All right, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has 1 leg. Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters? No, this amputee has 1 giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed.
Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A Blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Oh, it's on its chest, like some kind of Pokemon. Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him? My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me. Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpuppard. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake. Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes? Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off. Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Jirivulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbaena.
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 That's it, right? It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it'd be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake neck turtle. It's a lot like the Serpuppard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there. Well, hey there, partner! Have you ever wondered where your favorite Odd Ones merch comes from? Well, head on down to Odd Ones Family Farm and see where the merch comes to life. Here at Odd Ones, we've got the largest merch fields in the country. We have a whole lot of things for you to enjoy. Over here, we've got pins and keychains growing by the bushel. We water them with fresh enamel every day so they stay nice and shiny. Look at the glimmer on that sucker.
Glimmery.
Or maybe you want to stop by our tree shirt orchard and see how we grow our t-shirts and hoodies. Softer than a marshmallow's bottom. We pick these fresh just before the holiday season. And if you buy one shirt, I'll throw in another one just because I like ya. Oh, would you look at this? Our plushies are just about ready to harvest. Get ready to see one of nature's most amazing miracles. Oh, whoops, I guess they're not ripe yet. But wait, there's more! All of our posters and board games are printed from our Pedigree inkjet cows. How's your ink today, Bessie? You think you can print one more poster for us? Ah, now look at that shine!
be sure to stop by our petting zoo and bundle up in one of our fleece blankets during this cold winter season. And don't you worry, we remove the sheep carcass before we send you the blanket. Yes, sirree, we've got deals for everybody. Get them while they're hot. Come on, don't be shy. Little buddy, are you lost? If you're searching for something really special, we've got that too. You're a lucky one, you know that? I don't usually let folks see what I'm cooking down here. Usually. I've got the peekaboo print shirt, cozy colored print hoodies and long sleeve tees, freshly squeezed wave knit socks. Oh, those? Those are just Baby Jane's drool beanies. Careful, they bite. Now this... this is the best, most cream-of-the-crop invention yet. Now all of my fans can have a little piece of me. And I can be with them forever.
Help me.
Where are you going? Don't you want to stay for the deals?
No caramel hurt in the making of this video. Can't sit and sit about until they stop, though. Anyways, now that the harvest has begun, hurry on over to thegodonesout.com to find your perfect bundle before we sell out. Our new lab items include our doodle hoodie, Baby James beanie, a bunch of new shirts, arcade blanket, color weighted socks, and my personal favorite, the God Ones Out official lava lamp. This is also the chance to grab some oddballs merch, too. Grab your James, Max, and Josie Click today. And remember, don't go to any scary farms this holiday season. But if you do, be sure to film it. All right, that's all you're going to hear from me. Remember to wear your seatbelt.
James, you said you were going to make a teacher's part two. I didn't subscribe to fake news.
I know. Don't worry, I'll do that next video. But right now we're doing this. So my friend Your Movie Sucks, great channel, over 500,000 subs, asked me and a bunch of other YouTubers if we could talk about a movie that scared us as a kid. Now, growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies. I remember one time my parents were watching a movie downstairs, and I went down to see what all the noises were about, and my mom said, "Oh no, honey, you can't watch this, it's too scary." And then years later, I learned that the movie they were watching was Jurassic Park. I think I could have handled it, Mom. I don't know if you could tell by the length of this video, but it's going to be pretty different than the videos that I usually post. But I think it's good to try out new things, and hopefully we'll all have a fun time listening to me talk about this movie. Because, folks, I'm excited to share with you the movie that traumatized me most as a kid. And that movie is, drumroll please, is, you already read the title, The Dark Crystal. Okay, so The Dark Crystal came out in 1982, 14 years before I was even born. This movie was made for a whole different generation of people, but somehow I still saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, my family didn't own it on VHS, and I forget how old I was exactly, but let's say for the sake of this video, I saw this movie when I was 17. Because that's legally still a child. This movie was directed by Frank Oz and freaking Jim Henson. Jim Henson is the creator of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but The Muppets? You might have seen them before. There's no denying that Jim Henson was a very talented man when it came to puppets, and the work he did on The Dark Crystal is amazing. As much as I'm about to talk this movie down, it's honestly a work of art. The most enjoyment I got rewatching it was just the artistic appreciation of the character design, the scenery, the costumes, and most importantly, the puppetry. Some of the puppetry was amazing, like this shot. How'd they do that without CGI? And did I mention that there's no people in this film? Except for full body shots, then they just used a real person dressed up and had them not face the camera. But as I rewatched The Dark Crystal, I realized that the movie was kinda garbage. So instead of talking about the parts of the movie that scared me as a child, I'm gonna be talking about why this movie was pretty bad. So now this video just turned into one of those bad movie review videos, but honestly, I like watching other people talk about bad movies, like The Room and Birdemic and... Now, what was that other one? I can't quite put my paw on it. For this video, I ended up doing some research, something I don't normally do for videos, and oh man, is this rabbit hole deep. Jim Henson had a bunch of ideas for the world of The Dark Crystal, but wasn't able to fit all of his ideas into 90 minutes of film. And because he didn't explain the rules of the world well enough, the movie suffered. It felt unfinished and unstarted. Basically, the movie didn't leave you wanting more, it just left you thinking, Wait, what? Some of you might be thinking, well, James, it's just a kid's movie. Kids are dumb. Why are you analyzing a kid?
Shut up.
Brian Froud, one of the head artists of the movie, even said that when we finished the film, we knew that we had only seen a fragment of this other world. Bad fragment, I guess. So even the creators of this movie felt that they left out a lot of stuff. So in 2012, a three-part comic book was published to be as a prequel to the movie, and I bought and read all three of them. And I will say that they did do a better job explaining the world that Jim Henson had in mind, but you shouldn't have to read a book before you see a movie.
Especially since the books weren't available until after the movie came out.
In the movie, stuff happens for no reason. Like in one scene, the main character... This is Jen, the main character, by the way. Get used to looking at this guy's face. I've done so much digging and research into this world that I'm completely desensitized by how weird this puppet looks. If you think this puppet looks creepy, you should have seen some of his earlier designs. Just be thankful this is what you ended up with. So in this scene, Jen is trying to pick out which of the crystal shards is the right one that he needs for his quest. And what does he do to find the right one? That's right, he plays his flute, and then the right shard he needed just glows! Wouldn't you do that too if you were in the same situation? This movie doesn't explain why the crystal likes his music, it doesn't come up later, it just happens. That's basically this whole movie. Things happening slowly. So here we go, children. Hold my hand as I take you on a magical journey, but not too magical that it doesn't make sense. That is the Dark Crystal. The plot. It starts with a narrator telling us that there's this world and that it's dying. By the way, this world is named Thra. They don't mention it once in the movie, but in the prequels and in the Wikipedia article, they all called it Thra. Okay. Thra is dying because this one crystal, this one, cracked. How? I don't know. I mean, I do know because I read the prequels, but this movie doesn't tell us. Are you still with me? Good, we're not even a minute in. Because this crystal cracked, two new species were born. The cruel Skeksis, the bad guys, and the gentle mystics, the good guys. And both species are dying. Now, I'm no biologist, but I think they're probably dying because there's no woman. That would wipe out a species pretty quickly, I'd think. Instead of having women, the Skeksis use the crystal to make them young again. Maybe. It's either the crystal or the sun.
So too they learn to draw new life from the sun.
Okay, so then what do you need the crystal for? Now we see the good creatures, the mystics, and with the mystics lives another creature called a Gelfling. It's like an elfling, but with a G. You may remember him from earlier. He's naked now, but meet your protagonist, Jen. This movie makes up so many words, just try and keep up.
And a journey must begin. The journey of Jen.
Okay, that's a little pretentious movie. Alright, let's tone it down a little. Then we see that the Emperor Skeksis is dying, oh no. And then we get the second scariest scene in the whole movie. Yeah, we're not even 15 minutes in and we're at the part that gave me nightmares. Then the mystic that's basically Jen's dad is also dying, and he tells Jen that he needs to find the cracked piece of the crystal, the shard, and then he just needs to plop that sucker back in the crystal where it belongs. And then boom boom, the world is saved. Again, they don't explain why doing this would save the world. Like, they could have at least tried to make something up, like once the crystal is fixed, woman will appear. Jen's dad tells him to
follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogre.
Now, I'm no astronomer, but I think following the sun for a day would just make you go in a circle. What am I supposed to do when it's noon? Now the Skeksis, they're like, oh well dang it guys, who's gonna be our new emperor? This Skeksis named Chamberlain.
It's time to make my move.
Who is my second favorite character in this whole movie, thinks that he should be emperor. I mean, who wouldn't want to be emperor of like eight other bird monsters? The way that you can remember that this Skeksis is Chamberlain is that every time he's on camera, he says this. Hey man, you can't be emperor, says the Skeksis. Oh yeah? Fight me for it, replied Chamberlain. Since these two are puppets and don't have lower bodies, they can't actually fight each other, which is super disappointing. So instead, the two have a competition to see who can hit a rock the hardest, because that's how you tell who's fit to lead. You can't have someone be your emperor when they can't even hit a rock that hard. Anyway, Chamberlain loses, and all the other Skeksis banish him and rip up his clothes. Okay, now hold on. Do you see what's funny about this screenshot? This Skeksis is wearing glasses, meaning in this universe optometrists exist, and this Skeksis had to go through an eye exam to get his prescription. Do you like number one or number two? Does anyone else think that's funny? No? Alright. Anyway, after the Skeksis banish Chamberlain, they see in the crystal that there's this Gelfling just walking around. Man, I didn't know the crystal could snitch like that. So they send out these crab monsters to get him. And by the way, those crab monsters are called Garthams, and they are created by this handsome Skeksis. You'd know that if you read the Wikipedia article. Anyway, back to Jen. What's he up to?
I'm not ready to go alone. Alright. Alone, then.
Took you long enough. Jen is supposed to follow the sun to Agura's house? Agura's? He runs into her and she's this old hag who tells him that the three suns are going to line up soon, and when that happens, the world might end. Or it will begin. She doesn't know.
I know because I've already seen this movie.
She also, for some reason, has a box of crystals. One of them is the shard that Jen is looking for, but she doesn't know which.
Which one is it?
Don't know.
So Jen narrows down the box of crystals to three shards.
It's one of these three, I'm sure.
What? No, you've never even seen the Dark Crystal. How do you know it's one of those? Whatever, okay? I can roll with this. Then, if you remember, Jen gets the idea to play his flute at the shard, and then the correct shard just glows for some reason. Why does the crystal react to flute music? That's not a thing. Crystals don't have ears. Now, when you create a fantasy world, you can't explain everything. Sometimes the answer is just, oh, it's magic. In Frozen, they don't explain how Elsa got her ice powers. She was just born with it, okay? It's magic. And the audience is all okay with it, as long as they don't take it too far. But this movie just tries to pull off so much stuff that doesn't make sense. There's a line, and this movie crosses it multiple times. Then the crab people attack Agura's house, Jen escapes with a shard, boom, next day. Okay, I know I've been talking bad about this movie, but the amount of detail in this forest scene is pretty amazing. I mean, it's not doing anything to drive the plot forward, but I just think it's cool to look at. Anyway, back to review mode. Jen falls in the mud, what an idiot, and then he meets up with the... Oh jeez, that's a girl! That's a girl! So there's a girl Gelfling now, her name is Kira.
I'll take a potato chip and eat it.
She's speaking gibberish.
And
then for some unexplained, unimportant reason, when they touch hands, they share memories. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens when you touch hands with another woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that's supposed to happen.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
I'm having a bath.
Okay, three things. First, this seems like a plot device-y way to just throw in some backstory, but... whatever. Second, Jen, you just found out that you're not the last of your species, and when you realize that you're sharing memories with her, you decide to show this person you just met you having a bath. I mean, I guess she did show you her mom dying, so let's just get all that personal stuff out of the way. And third, somewhere on Earth, there exists a baby, naked Jen puppet. And I need to have it. Then we're introduced to my third favorite character, Kira's dog, Fizzgig. He doesn't really add anything to the story, he's just that lovable pet slash side character. Hey, that's a lot like my dog.
Hey, puppy!
Also, Kira can talk to animals. Okay. Then we're treated to this really great scene. A whole 2 minutes of the Skeksis eating. But honestly, though, I kinda love this scene. It does a great job creeping me out. Okay, it does go on for a minute too long, but bear with me here. The Skeksis' clothing and silverware are Victorian, so it gives off a haunted mansion sort of vibe. And just the character design and the way the Skeksis are eating, it just comes off as unnerving. A lot of movies' scary parts are jump scares or gore. At least I think they do that, I'm not allowed to watch scary movies. But this is such a different way to unease an audience. It kinda reminds me of the first half of a Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared video. Nothing necessarily scary is happening, but it's still able to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Basically, the whole point of this scene was that the crab people were like, hey, we got this old hag, but we didn't get the Gelfling. And then the Skeksis were like, wow, okay, release the crystal bats.
Crystal bats, fly! Search the land, search the water, search the sky!
Okay, this might be nitpicking, and I'm no Gelfling expert, but I think you can rule out searching the sky. I don't see too many Gelflings just flying around. So one of the bats finds Jen and Kira. They go back to Kira's village. Jen doesn't even know where he's supposed to take the shard. His dad never told him what to do after he got the shard. He tells Kira about his quest and what Algura told him.
You know the three suns in the sky? They're going to come together soon. It's called the great something or other.
See, even Jen doesn't remember these made-up names. Really would have been convenient if you told her this information when you were sharing memories. So then the crab monsters show up and basically murder and capture Kira's whole family. Yeah, it was pretty traumatizing. And right when the crab monsters are about to attack Jen and Kira, Chamberlain comes out of nowhere. Remember the guy? He steps in between them and stops the attack, and Kira and Jen escape because Chamberlain saved them.
Oh, and then Jen throws away the shard. Boom, next day. Kira finds the shard that Jen threw, and then the two find some hieroglyphics about a prophecy. It says a Gelfling is going to save the world and kill all the Skeksis, it doesn't matter. And then, oh, Chamberlain shows up. Hey, Chamberlain. Hey, guys, I'm sorry for killing your entire species. We just didn't want the prophecy to come to fruition. You understand, right? So what if we all go to the castle together, we can eat some food, and just have a gay old time and talk this whole thing over? What do you think? And then he says, please, a lot.
Please, please, please. Please, yes, please.
Now how can you say no to this lovable guy? He just got kicked out of the Skeksis Club, he's all alone, he just saved you from some crab monsters, and he did say please a lot. I'm just saying, if I was Jen, I totally would have trusted Chamberlain 100%. But instead, Jen just stares at him blankly, and then Kira ruins everything and tells Jen not to trust him, and then they run away.
Wait! Please make peace!
Eh, might have been the right call. So then, for some reason, Kira knows where the castle is, and since she can talk to animals, she calls up these things called Landstriders. They're just a person walking on four stilts, and they ride the Landstriders all the way to the castle. I have a lot of problems with this next scene. So one of the Skeksis takes a podling that they just captured, locks it into a chair, and tells the podling that they're gonna suck its essence away and make it a slave.
Won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
You know, the podlings don't speak English. They speak a whole different language. The Skeksis is just talking gibberish to this guy while he's just locked in a chair like, what's going on? Like, none of what you're saying is going through this guy's head. And so only the Emperor can drink the essence, and that will make him stay young forever. So what do you need the sun for? And also, what killed the last Skeksis? Looked like old age to me. Yeah, no, that's cool and all, but... We get the most terrifying scene in the whole movie. That's right, this is the winner. You gave me the most nightmare scene. You win $1 million. Congratulations, scene! I can go on for hours about how this part of the movie gave me nightmares, but honestly, it speaks for itself. I think what made it worse was that the podling was tied down to the chair and he was just so helpless and his whole face melted off and just... Ugh! But now that I'm older, all I can think is, what do you guys need slaves for? So far, the only thing slaves have done was pull on a rope to make some swords appear out of the ground and bring you guys a plate of food. Why is there such a high demand for slaves that you need to make new ones? What do you guys even do all day? Then Kira and Jen arrive at the castle. They see the crab people taking in the pod people from Kira's village. They try and save the podlings, but completely fail. The Landstriders die immediately. Jen and Kira open the cage that the podlings are in, and then the two get cornered. And what are they gonna do, you ask? Well, isn't it obvious? They're gonna jump and slowly float down to safety because Kira has wings! That never came up in the memory sharing bit! So I guess when the Skeksis told the Crystal Bats to search for the Gelflings in the sky, they weren't that far off. Hey Kira, sorry we left your whole family back there. We totally didn't save them, like, at all. They're probably gonna get turned into slaves now. Okay, we're almost done, everyone. We're getting to Climax Town. Jen and Kira sneak into the castle. Chamberlain's there. He basically murders Jen. And since he captured a Gelfling, he's not an outcast anymore. You guys should have just went with him the first time. Now two Landstriders are dead. Kira goes into the slave room, and as a kid, I was already so traumatized the first time seeing a podling get turned into a slave, and now seeing Kira getting her essence taken away, I lost my mind. Oh, shoot! Kira's getting turned into a slave! Luckily, remember the old hag, Agura? She's like, yo, you can talk to animals, just ask them to help you. Oh, okay.
Come on, Leo!
She breaks free, and the animals push the Skeksis that was in the room down this pit, and that kills them. Leading up to this point, it's hinted that the Skeksis and the Mystics are, like, connected. When something happens to a Skeksis, there's a mystic counterpart that experiences the same thing. So when this Skeksis died, there was a mystic just walking around that just... And none of the other mystics react. Yeah, it happens. Then we see that the mystics can control the crab monsters. I'm guessing it's because they're connected to the Skeksis who also can control the crab monsters. So having a mystic go with Jen on his journey in the first place would have been super helpful back when Kira's village was getting raided. Alright, let's just wrap this up. Vizgig dies, Jen's not really dead, he finds the dark crystal, he jumps to it and then drops the shard. Kira has to throw the shard back to Jen, but while she's doing that she gets murdered. I said spoiler warning, right? And then Jen plops that sucker back into the crystal. The castle crumbles around everyone and the world is saved. But first, the Skeksis and the Mystics walk into each other because they're connected, remember? They become one again, and are you ready for this? They walk into each other and they turn into tree aliens. I'm not even joking. According to the prequels, these things are actually aliens. This is what the whole movie has been building up to. The bad guys are just one half of a schizophrenic alien tree person, and if you read the prequels, you'd know that. Is this supposed to be a plot twist? Because to me, it just seems like a plot is doing whatever it wants. So much weird, unexplained stuff has already happened in this movie, so at this point, I don't even care. By the way, Kieran Fizgig don't actually die. This is a kids movie, after all. And then the world is saved, even though there's only like 3 people who inhabit it now. The end. So that was the movie. Want to know something funny? I've already used more words in this video than there were words in the entire movie. Also, I need to ask, Jen was supposedly the chosen one.
At this time, Jen is the chosen one.
But I would make the argument that Kira should have been the chosen one. Let me go down my list. She saved Jen from the mud. She sniped a crystal bat out of the sky. When the crab monsters attacked, she had to tell Jen to run. She found the shard on the ground after Jen threw it. She tells Jen not to trust Chamberlain. She knew where the castle was and got the Landstriders to take them there. She used her wings to float Jen down to safety. She was able to get out of being turned into a slave by herself. And she threw the shard back to Jen after his butterfingers dropped it. And how does she get rewarded? By getting stabbed. All Jen did was play his flute at a magic rock. This guy's a doofus. Who chose Jen to be the chosen one? Bad choice. Now, I've said who my second and third favorite character in this movie is, but who's my favorite character? There's only like 3 other characters to choose from, so who could it be? Well, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite character isn't in this movie. My favorite character of the Dark Crystal universe is Reunip. Agura's son. Okay, I know I just finished the movie, but let me talk about the prequel comics for a minute. Remember Agura, the old lady? Well, turns out she's an immortal being and has been around since the creation of this world. Alright, and one day a meteor hits the planet, and she, like anyone else would do, gives life to it. And out pops Reunip. And he's basically the main character of the prequel books, and is also technically an alien. I like him because he's the only one who questions what's going on. He asks the same questions I'm asking. So he's my favorite, he's the only character I ever wanted to cosplay. If they ever make the prequels into a movie, I call dibs on playing Reunip, that's how it works. I call dibs on playing this character. I just show up to auditions and I'm like, I actually called dibs, so... Also, in the second book, Agura and her son are having a moment, and Reunip says, "Will you remember me, mother? After all the harm I caused? I will never forget you, child." Well, you didn't really seem to remember him in the movie. Also, if there's any producers watching, that was my audition just now to play Reunip. Would I recommend you watch The Dark Crystal? Well, I did just spoil the whole thing, so no, it would be a waste of time at this point. But if I was talking to someone who hasn't watched this video, then yeah, I would recommend it. Even with all of its flaws, I still think it's a creative film and... I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to talk about it afterwards. Maybe I was desensitized doing all this research, but I also enjoyed the prequel comic books. After all, my favorite character's in there. There's also a manga that was made, Legends of the Dark Crystal, and it's supposed to take place in between these books and the movie, so these books don't even bridge the gap between the start of the... It leaves still on a cliffhanger. These books still leave on a cliffhanger. Speaking of manga, there were plans to make a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie, but the film ended up getting canceled. But a 12-part comic series is being produced by Boom Studios, and it's not even completed yet. They're only on, like, the second installment. This is recent, you guys, so now is a great time to get into the Dark Crystal fandom. Like I said, I think The Dark Crystal is a creative story. Jim Henson really bit off more than he can chew making this movie, but seeing how many comics have been made to tell this story, maybe The Dark Crystal is told better through comics and not with the limitations of puppets from the 80s. Anyway, that's just what I thought about the movie. Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that
puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at internet stuff, which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2. I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it. And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me, thinking I was someone else, and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story! Hashtag Subway 4, it wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway, how may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James, how may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name. Idiot. Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it alright if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding, I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you going to stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize. But my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma, because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now, unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning, and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said,
I think you have the wrong number.
Okay. Goodbye.
No, don't hang up the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately, I got a call from the same number. And I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
Hold it, Vance.
Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking, and I could actually understand her, and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also, I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said,
well, they must have given it to you wrong.
Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.
You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her, I'll just call her Mom's Friend. Mom's Friend comes up to me and says, hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders?
Ew.
I think the only reason she chose me was because, one, I'm good at math, duh, and two, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's Friend asked if I wanted to chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, yeah, I was alright. There's definitely some Sevies watching right now thinking, oh, I'm not that bad. Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes, I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find.
I was so
cool.
Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important. I don't count, though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24-year-olds, but I don't think that's true, because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. Is that the Odd Ones Out? Oh my goodness, that's the Odd Ones Out! Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared. They were all still talking in their cliques. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, that sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college, I go to this group of kiddos and I say, so what do you want to be when you grow up? And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying, astronaut or doctor. And then I was going to say, well, you could learn that in college! That's what I was going to say. So what do you want to be when you grow up? They said, nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, why is this old guy trying to talk to us? So then I just walked away. Alright, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube. But that's tacky, you don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, so, do you guys watch any YouTube videos? And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, Rice Gum. Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Rice Gum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, who's that? And someone else said, Rice Gum. And then I said, oh, who's that? And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, "The Odd One's out! The Odd One's out!" over and over, and I just said, "Hey," back to him. And that was it, we just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool. We ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material, they were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video, and this goes for you college folks too. Kids? Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. Alright, lesson's over. We're not gonna do an end card for this video
because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We want to get them out before Christmas, but then we're going to send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything. It's just on the floor.
Hey, this is kind of like a part two video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part one video to understand what I talk about in this video. But I mean, if you haven't watched part one, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes? Whoa, slow down. What kind of bread? Foot long or 6 inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables. And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always. I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, what kind of cheese? And they would say, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
what kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use a toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that, because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure. Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado? I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things, you know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out. But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2 foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot-long. And guys, the pastrami is super good, but I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot. I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. All right, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches, and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on the side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, no, on the side. And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, no, on the side. At this point, I don't know what this guy wants. So I ask him, on the side of what? And then he screams, onions! And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly, because I put the sauce on, and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time, this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this! And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, anything else? And he says, 7 meatballs.
What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches.
But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for.
Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently.
Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally.
I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line.
No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him.
But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asked for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on. More! I'll sprinkle some on. More! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, that's fine. All right, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully, I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich, and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich, and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, all right, man. This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, anything else? And he said, nope. Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back, and I was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took 3 large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, we only have tuna salad. I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay, because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this! So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-oo! Shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then, when we did our physical education class, it was, like, extra hard. Like, we ran 2 laps instead of 1. And we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, you want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other.
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month. And these 2 kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky. Hey you guys, coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this. So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these 2 kids start playing, and one kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up. Did I win? So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, hey, bro. 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 So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little, and the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth, so he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out, and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened, and everyone was like, oh yeah, geez man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him, he just flopped down. And we almost got away with it, except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, They were playing bodies. And person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it! I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Draw a picture right now. Alright, you done? That sucks, right? I spent 2 hours on the face, I couldn't get the hands right, and when I compared my art to this other artist I found online who's younger than me, it makes me want to curb stomp this monstrosity so no one ever has to look at it again. Okay, now, think of a joke. Not one you've already heard before. I want you to think up a brand new, never been done before joke. Okay. You know how cats are, like, lazy? Maybe we could do a joke about a lazy cat and his owner is like, ah, stop being so lazy. That sucked too. Now imagine doing both of those things together and then putting that artwork up for the entire world to leave their unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And on top of that, you also make virtually no money off of it. Who in their right mind would put themselves through that kind of torture? Well, dear viewer, I would like you all to meet Zachary. Zachary is a webcomic artist. He makes webcomics just so when you're scrolling through your timeline while taking your morning poo, you get a little chuckle to yourself. And then you keep on scrolling, forgetting about his existence entirely in mere seconds. I have a soft spot for funny webcomics. Not the super serious superhero ones or the Japanese ones. Wait, why is this part all pixely? Webcomics can be shared on any platform. In fact, a lot of webcomics get reposted without the artist's consent and with their names removed. Which is kind of weird that someone went through the effort of removing a watermark when they could have just, you know, not done anything and left it. I hope you all realize that behind every comic is an artist who just wanted to make you laugh and doodle something that day. I started reading webcomics at a very young age. Back then, we just called them comics. They were really the only books that I liked to read, and the only place you could read the hottest new comics was in the newspaper. Oh, sorry, I should clarify. A newspaper is a stack of gray paper that would be delivered to your house by a child riding a bike, and they would print 19 pages of useless information and have one page dedicated to the funnies. This is where the classics were born. You know the ones, the Calvin and Hobbes, the Garfields, the Far Sides. Some of these comics have made me laugh harder than any meme ever has. I just want to say that Calvin and Hobbes was an extremely creative comic. It was a comic about a rambunctious boy that had a giant predatory animal best friend. I mean, where else have you seen that before? By the way, if you ever see those Calvin peeing bumper stickers, those are unlicensed knockoffs and really go against everything Calvin and his creator, Bill Watterson, stood for. In fact, all Calvin and Hobbes merchandise is unlicensed because Bill Watterson never made merchandise. But I mean, aren't these crochet Hobbes dolls the coolest? So there was only enough space in the paper for about 20 comics, and last time I counted, there were way more than 20 comic creators. So if you wanted to get your silly little comic in the newspaper, you had some fierce competition. But now, anyone with a computer and enough dedication can create comics that get shared by millions of people. You don't even need a fancy drawing tablet or expensive painting software, or even art skills in general. Webcomics and the internet and memes have been intertwined for decades. Many of your favorite meme formats are just edited webcomics. Now, in most cases, if someone took an artist's work, defaced it, and then re-uploaded it without credit, that'd be a bad thing. But memes are different, I guess. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want you all to know that these artists have made other comics that are just as funny, and you should support their work and buy their books, and if you're going to make a webcomic edit, please just keep in the watermark. It's literally more work to take it out, and you're being an asshole. Some of you original gangsters may remember that I also used to be a webcomic artist. I posted my first webcomic in 2012, which was over 10 years. 10 years?! It's been that long? What the fuck? I'll be honest, my webcomics took a little while to get some traction. Let me explain something. all the comics I would read in the newspaper had distinguished characters with personalities. A lot of times, the punchline of a newspaper comic would only be funny because we knew the characters and their mannerisms. Garfield hates Mondays, so instead of him hating Friday the 13th, he hates Monday the 13th. That's a good one, Garfield. So I try to make a webcomic like that with my own little universe. I'm gonna be a little vulnerable for a minute. Let's talk about my OCs I made when I was a 16-year-old boy. There were three main brothers. Jake, who was a self-insert character. One time I dressed up as him for Halloween. Justin, the book-smart straight man. Straight man as in the character archetype, not the sexuality. Although if any of the brothers were gay, Justin would be the gay one. And Kevin, the laid-back older brother who did whatever he wanted because he's the oldest. Those three were the main boys. Jake, Justin, and Kevin. The three whitest names anyone's ever heard. Now, if you're an up-and-coming comedy webcomic artist, I would suggest not to do what I did. If you're just trying to make someone laugh, you don't need a whole cast of characters that have intricate relationships. Just tell your joke and leave. Or don't. It's your art. You can do whatever you want. Eventually, I wanted to rebrand myself. Instead of having distinguished, defined characters, I went with a very basic-looking character design that had absolutely no distinguishing features at all. And I settled on a design that looked like this. I mean, over time, I refined it. I originally posted my comics exclusively to Tumblr. It was just me and this other obscure webcomic about trolls. We were the two main ones, really. Now, if you're still an up-and-coming webcomic artist, then you should post your comics to every platform imaginable. I learned the importance of cross-platform promotion the not-so-easy way. One day, I got a Tumblr message from someone asking if they could post my comics to a small, unknown app called iFunny. And I said, sure. Then that guy would periodically send me messages like, dude, we are blowing up! Our comics keep getting featured! And I was like, our? Then I wake up to messages asking, hey, are you the one posting these to iFunny? And I said, no, but I gave the other guy permission to. You know he's impersonating you and starting beef with other artists, right? Hmm? It turned out that iFunny was my most popular social media account, and I didn't even have access to it. I eventually got the account back, and now people tell me that they loved reading my comics on iFunny back in the day, which wasn't even part of the plan originally. Webcomics have really impacted me and this channel. Some of my earliest online friends were other webcomic artists who I don't keep in touch with as much as I should. My bad, guys, I'm sorry. My username is based off my webcomic, my character design was made for my webcomic, and even my cannonball profile picture is from a panel in my webcomic. I really hope this video makes you appreciate the webcomics that you see on your timeline. I know you see them, they're everywhere. If you come across a comic you like, I want you to try and find the original artist's socials and browse their other comics they've created. I guarantee you'll find some banger comics that just didn't get the same amount of attention as the other ones. And who knows, you might just make a difference in someone's art career. You know, making a whole video about webcomics has made me miss my first love. A lot of times when I think of a joke, I have to wait 2 months to tell it, and at that point I don't even know if it's funny anymore. But a webcomic can have same-day joke delivery. So this is how I'm officially announcing that I'm making webcomics again. I'll be posting them on my website and maybe Twitter if I'm still verified. There's already 6 brand new comics. Feel free to make any meme edits of them. I don't care. Also, be sure to check out this amazing reversible toasty plush. It's honestly my favorite thing. And up until April 10th, we're running Merch Madness, where you can possibly score a free VidCon ticket and meet up with me. You don't even need to buy anything to enter, so check out the description for more information. I'm super excited to be making comics again. It's how I started out my internet journey. I'm going to try and post at least 1 comic a week, so be on the lookout for those. Thank you all for watching and sticking through this end card. Y'all are the real ones. To tell you this story, I need to introduce to you a new character in my life. I try to keep some parts of my life private and off YouTube, but this story wouldn't make sense if I called this person a friend I know. We've both talked about it, and she's okay with me telling you that, guys, I have received the highest milestone a YouTuber can receive. A girlfriend. Who I will be calling for the remainder of this video, GIF. That's right, I have a girlfriend now, so you can stop asking if I'm into guys. I mean, I guess I could still technically be into guys, but please stop asking. Dang, I got muscles and a girlfriend now? Man, even I'm jealous of myself. Now, to get the elephant in the room out of the way, it's not Jaden, and it never was Jaden. And it's not the elephant either. The elephant broke up with me because I kept calling her an elephant. I know that the internet likes their ships, but let me just say this once and for all. It's not okay to ship real people that have their own lives and relationships off of YouTube. Hopefully this is all obvious and you're as grossed out as much as I am, because some of you don't seem to mind that we're all real people behind the screen and it can be really damaging to our personal lives. So getting things back on track, one day during quarantine, me and my girlfriend were feeling lethargic and a little sad, as one does in quarantine. We had both bought Disneyland annual passes and were planning on going to the park every single day of 2020, but the timing could not have worked out more horribly, and I still don't know if I'm getting a refund. I'm not, aren't I? I had one friend tell me that something he did to cheer up was that him and his GIF drove down to the beach and had a picnic in their car, and they just relaxed and watched the sunset. And I thought that sounded fun and tranquil as shit, so me and my GIF decided that we too were also going to visit the recently opened beach and be tranquil as shit. Obviously, we were going to wear masks and stay 6 feet apart from everyone, including each other. In my head, I was imagining we would just find a secluded area and we would watch the wet, white, watery waves wash westward while wondering what weather we would want. What? So that weekend, we packed up our beach supplies, sandwiches, and our doggies, and we started our hour-long journey to total tranquility. Floof gets very excited whenever she's wearing a leash, and in car rides, she has this energy like, "Yes, we get to go somewhere! I wonder where we're going!" While GIF's dog, who I will be giving the fake name of Floof 2, is more like, "I wonder where we're going." Our journey started out smoothly, and there were no problems for about 45 minutes. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was all smooth sailing. All of a sudden, Floof 2 starts going, which, if you own a dog, you know that means things are about to go down. Or rather, things are about to come up, and emotions and cleanliness are about to go down. So Floof 2 threw up all over my GIF's leg and on the car floor. We quickly pulled over before anyone passed out from how bad it smelled, and we used the napkins we packed to wipe everything down. We put the throw-up napkins into a sandwich bag, which now became the throw-up bag. A minor setback, to be sure, but we were still determined to relax and have a good time. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was smooth sailing minus dog vomit. As we kept driving, we were all a little tense from the unprompted dog regurgitation, but I had a solution to ease everyone's mood. Since we were on our way to the beach, I played popular beach music like Surfin' USA. But by the time we got to California Girls, Floof 2 started going, and I mean really going, like West Coast representin' going. And GIF put her hands up like, "Oh, oh, oh, oh!" Floof 2 puked 2 times in 1 60-minute trip. That day, we learned that this California girl has unforgettable motion sickness. It's undeniable. I don't want to go into too much detail because I have to draw the details, but let's just say that GIF's hands were pretty full. I held open the throw-up bag and GIF dumped the second round of puke from her hand into the bag. Also, we were out of napkins because we weren't expecting to have to do this 2 times, let alone 1 times. So GIF had to drive the rest of the way with her hand held up like this. We entertained the idea of Floof 1 licking GIF's hand clean, but after some debating, we decided that doing so would be gross. After 2 dog pukes, we finally got to the beach and saw that it was very crowded and most people weren't even wearing masks. I considered throwing the throw-up bag at them, but after some debate, we decided that we still might need the throw-up bag. Fortunately, we didn't have to debate if going in was still a good idea because as we pulled up, a deputy sheriff was closing the front gate. The beach was at full capacity. "Do not lose hope, Biff," said my GIF, "for I shall find a closer spot within a jiff. For looking at my phone, you see, there is a beach within a mile or 3. End of line. So we decided to try another beach, but when we got there, it was already full and blocked off. Maybe if we didn't pull over to clean up dog puke, we would have gotten there in time. But now that I'm thinking about it, it would have been impossible to relax at a beach that was at full capacity in the middle of a pandemic anyways. The good thing about Cali is that the whole edge is a beach, so we could do this all day. I looked on my phone and found another beach 15 minutes away and we headed off. I suggested that we stopped at a Walmart parking lot or something and wash our hands and recoup, but my unnamed GIF was determined to wash her puke-stained hands with the salt water of the Pacific Ocean. We pulled up to the third beach, the parking lot was empty and closed off, but there was still a clean handful of people already there. The beach wasn't even close to capacity, so we could definitely find a secluded enough area and finally relax. And clean up this dog vom like you, dude. If you're wondering if this beach was closed and these people were just ignoring the closed signs, we thought so too. But there are lifeguards out, so I guess the parking lot was just practicing social distancing or something, I don't know. We had to park the car pretty far away from the beach and walk the rest of the way. And as soon as we stepped out of the car, it was Floof One's turn to wreak havoc and she dropped about half her body weight in poop onto a grass patch. I don't think this day would have been salvageable if I had to catch that in my hands. Speaking of crap, Floof Two looked like crap and probably wanted to go home. Meanwhile, Floof One was still, yes, I was holding that puppy in, but now we're at our destination!
Could you just...
You're being a lot right now. It wasn't the best car ride, but whatever, let's just not think about it. We're both in our flippy floppies, carrying our towels, sunscreen, and unbagged sandwiches, ready for a nice, relaxing day at the beach, only to walk up and see the worst possible thing that we could have ever seen possibly. No, it wasn't a beached whale or my ex-girlfriend. What we saw was a sign posted at the entrance that was only three words long, but those words were no dogs allowed. Floof One was the only thing happy in that moment, unbeknownst to her that she was half the reason our trip was ruined. This sign won't stop me because I can't read! So, what did we do? Well, we ate our Sammies on a bench near a beach with our bitches, and we had nothing to wash it down with since we used our water to wash our hands and we couldn't drink from the ocean like we originally planned. And then we did what we in the business call give up. We drove back home empty-handed. Thankfully, both Floofs were sacked out from the day, even though they did literally nothing other than push bodily chunks out from both ends. I love both of those dogs, but I'm not bringing them back to the beach ever again. Not like they're allowed anyways. There's not a happy ending to this story. We were both very upset. But sometimes our most memorable trips are the ones we spend with people we love. And sometimes life's a beach.
I don't go outside that much. Ergo, I don't see people that much. Ergo, I don't get recognized in public that much. Now you might think, James, really? You get recognized? But you're just some college dropout sitting in the closet right now making cartoons on the internet. People recognize you and talk to you and ask for your autograph? Yeah, I thought the same thing. I don't even show my face that much in my videos, so I don't know how people remembered what I looked like. When I first started drawing comics 4 years ago, I was never expecting that later people would be coming up to me and nervously asking me to write my name down on a piece of paper. Now, can I just talk about this? I don't have a signature. And if I'm going to be signing things, I really should start thinking about getting one. I signed 6,000 cards, and on all of them, I just wrote James and put a little smiley face. I probably wrote my name out more times that week than I did my entire life. Also, another thing, I have terrible handwriting. You'd think since I'm good at drawing cartoon characters, I should be good at drawing letters of the alphabet. Whenever I sign something, I always have to warn my fans, I'm really sorry, I have bad handwriting. And they always say the same thing, it's fine. No, it's not fine. I'm about to ruin whatever this pen touches. I don't get recognized nearly as many times as you might think. Like, I can go to the grocery store and not get recognized at all. Although, I am noticing that I get weird looks from kids now. I don't know if that's because of YouTube, though. But if you do see me out in the wild, then by all means, come up to me and say hi. Even if you're not sure it's me, still come up and ask. Even if I'm on my phone, just slap it out of my hand and I'll say, dude, what the heck? And then you say, the odd one's out, and I'll say, maybe. I'm a pretty chill guy, okay? The only time I can think of it not being okay to come up and talk to me is if I'm asleep. Don't wake me up, guys. One time I was at the dollar store, not a proud moment in my life, and later I went home and someone on Twitter asked, hey, were you just at the dollar store at this address? And I said, maybe. Another time I was at Chipotle, and I know in a previous video I said, hashtag boycott Chipotle because he didn't hire James like 3 years ago. But I'm a weak man. I might have to call off the boycott. So anyway, I'm standing in line to get a burrito, and I see a girl sitting down in the chairs looking at her phone, and she sort of looked like a girl that I went to high school with. Is that... Is that Rachel? I didn't say anything, though. I got my food, and as I was about to leave, I glanced back at the girl, and she was looking at me. We both had that look in our eye like, yeah, we know each other. So I went over to her and I said, hi, Rachel, are you James from The Odd Ones Out? You didn't go to high school with her. Okay, well, I'm gonna go now. Good luck on your own. Yeah, I am. What's your name? Maria? My name's James. You already knew that. If you're watching, Maria, when I saw you, I thought we went to high school together. You look like someone who was on my improv team. So I recently went to PAX South with my friend Eugene. That's not his real name. I asked him if he was okay with me saying his real name in this video. He said he was fine with it, but I think calling him Eugene would be funnier. If you don't know what PAX is, it's basically Comic-Con, but only for games. They have card games and board games, but it's mostly video games. I've known Eugene for about a year now, but I've only ever talked to him over the internet. One day he asked, hey, do you want to go to PAX South with me? It's in my hometown. And I said, sure, because I think that's what friends do. I'm going to leave out a lot of details about what I did at PAX because I think that can be a video all by itself. But just traveling there, I was recognized. I got on the airplane to go to Texas and this girl and her mom sat next to me. And I noticed that the girl's iPad wallpaper is Markiplier and Jacksepticeye. Part of me wanted to say, oh, so you watch YouTube videos? Do you know me? But that's a tacky thing to say. I thought if she knew me, she'll say something. Don't start off conversations like that. We went the whole flight without saying anything to each other, and then when we landed, Mom said to me, hey, my daughter thinks you make YouTube videos. Maybe. On Friday, Eugene had to go to classes before PAX, so I went with him just so I could go straight to the convention. One of his classes was in a computer lab. I sat down next to Eugene's friend, and the computer was already logged on, so I was worried that I might be stealing someone else's spot. Then some other guy walks into class, and he looks at me and goes, whoa. And I said, oh, is this your spot? You're the odd ones out. Maybe. I didn't know him, but he knew me. Which is weird to think about. Of all the places you'd expect to meet a YouTuber, your computer lab wouldn't be one of them. I started messing around on Microsoft Paint. I wasn't paying attention to the teacher. I drew a landscape with a horse. It was beautiful. And then I drew my cartoon character with a mouse. Also, side note, this is why you don't draw with a mouse, kids. And Eugene's friend saw it and said, hey, that looks like a YouTuber my brother watches. And I said, huh. Weird. And then I went to PAX. I got recognized a lot there. I almost got kicked out because of all the people who recognized me were causing a fire hazard. After PAX was over, I went to the airport to go home. I got recognized by another kid who didn't even go to PAX. And also apparently another person recognized me and took this stalkerish photo and tweeted it to me. You could have said, hey, I was just playing on my DS. I wasn't doing anything important. And then while I was making this video, I got recognized again at Target. Not including VidCon, PAX, and the junior high that I tutor at sometimes. Those were all the times that I got recognized. That I remember. At PAX, there is this boy who came up to me and said, you at the bed until you are 8 years old. He was bringing up a joke in the peeing video where I said if we ever meet each other in real life, you're not allowed to bring it up. But the kid was saying it obviously as a joke. I knew he was messing around with me, so I laughed and I pushed him away like, eh, get out of here, you knucklehead. But then later I was thinking, I probably pushed that kid a little too hard. I hope I didn't make a bad first impression. So, if I pushed you at PAX, I was doing it in a loving manner. In conclusion, if you see me out in public, don't be afraid to come up to me and say, hey James, you left your house. Good job. I'm a pretty normal person. I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class? And some publishing company makes them into a real book.
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more. But sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google, how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
Tonight is the return
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting real close to the microphone and smacking her lips. And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I tried to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice, and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you could beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video. Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me. Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic. Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic.
The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other. So that begs the question, do dogs like it? ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group along with a subreddit was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic. And look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy. Another popular... Look, I'm lip smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part 5?
Let's read the wiki.
The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claim to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa Numa, yay, I'm blue, dubba ding dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist roleplays, a library book return roleplay, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft Let's Play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker Let's Play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture roleplay. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek?
Shrek.
But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones, and they have almost 1 million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long, and then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like, really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James!
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry/trigonometry/calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry/trigonometry/calculus.
Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. e⁶ π + 1. Which is 0. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math.
Maybe what you really hate is spelling.
Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world?
That's right, never!
You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or
how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it? Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave? I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories. What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories? Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just, I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him. Pee faster! As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just, here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful. And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking. Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it, Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris? That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place. He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were. Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers! I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you! We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention, they called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for... Kids are really extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry! If they see you cry, you might as well move to China! And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record. Alright, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze. Like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose. And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom. So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not going to say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian. But I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, I have to go to the bathroom too. And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kinda wanna meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we'd have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice, oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So, Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last 4 digits of your social security number. Oh, okay, thanks, Mike. I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which, I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool! She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this, at Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay. And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips or
We had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was...
That other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just gonna go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved Marvel, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy? Why is brother screaming?
Shut the f*** up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad. I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi. What you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than... shoots? In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played. There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4,
I don't want to play that game, because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy-based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree, and you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone, because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the- Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these 5 pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you ask someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all 3 card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slight...